This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
You know, and this was actually the moment where the light bulb went off for me as the brand guy of like, we have such reach and we're essential service. And before the term essential was kind of becoming more talked about, like, you know, people rely on us for basic transportation and work every single day in, you know, 10,000 cities around the world. So we have an ultimate responsibility to show up in a way that assures people that we're there for them when they need us, assures them they can help them move safely, but also partners with governments to make sure we're getting the right information out.
Thomas, we're super fired up to have you.
Awesome. Nice to be here. And that's a hard act to follow.
You're going to follow it though, brother. I have a lot of admiration for you. We haven't had too much interacting through our years, but I'm really excited to have you here. And I really do admire a lot of your work.
Same. Thank you. Great to be here.
Why don't we set the foundation for context? Just a little personal stuff. Share a bit about yourself.
Sure. I think Andrea, who I've known for many years, I think summarized it well. I've had a pretty unconventional past. I often wonder, how did I get into marketing? What am I doing here? I've done lots of different things in my career, from wanting to be an aspiring actor as a kid to spending a long time actually in policy and government. I've worked at every level of government, city, state, and federal, including a stint in the Clinton administration. And also worked for Elliott Spitzer when I was the first CMO for the state of New York. Didn't know that the I Love New York brand was a state campaign and a state asset. As a kid who grew up in Brooklyn, that was actually the eye-opening thing when I sat down with the administration to hear, wow, the state owns the brand. Like, what can we do with that? It's pretty exciting. I went to the dark side. I've worked at McKinsey and in banking. And then
what's
I was really
what's the biggest thing you what's the biggest thing you learned from those kind of hardcore institutions?
Oh, you know that you can do anything if you break a problem down into its pieces. I think the McKinsey training was actually some of the most painful years of my lives, but some of the most incredible learnings. And there's sort of an arrogance, if you want to call it that, at McKinsey of like, we can solve any problem, because if you apply the rigor and break things down to its pieces and then figure out how to tackle them, you actually could solve almost anything.
Do you feel that it breaks down on the humanity side? Because that's always been my observation in looking at McKinsey, which I admire so much. The process is right, but so is the process of playing basketball perfectly. The problem is not everybody's LeBron James.
Yeah. Well, I think the challenge you have, and like one of my learnings from having been both in the public and private sectors, is in some ways the private sector is a whole lot easier, because what you're optimizing for is pretty clear and measurable. Usually it's some sort of business result. Whereas in the public sector, they're just, you know, there's so many stakeholders and confounding interests, and it's really not clear what success looks like or how you measure it. And
I think that's what makes it more difficult. By the way, can somebody clip that for me? Because that just sums up my life. Everything I try to talk about that's what an entrepreneur's life that has always run family businesses, that the health of your well-being is based on the health of the business, working with Fortune 5000 companies, which is the antithesis of that to the way that you just recapped it.
But I have to say that training as well, being in government, is incredible for being in business, particularly in these days, because like it's about managing stakeholders. Frankly, the bottom line is getting redefined, and the role of brands and businesses in the community and society and policy, I think, has evolved a ton. And it's, you know, it's true, brands and businesses can play a strong role in positive change. Like, so I think this whole conversation is actually coming around, which is why actually, now that I look back at my career, I'm like, I feel really fortunate to have done some really interesting things, and it followed my heart, and glad I didn't take that linear path, because I've got a lot more interesting experiences to draw on for the work that I'm doing today, which is great. So I spent a decade at Google, was really attracted to the leadership of the company and the mission and the power of Google. I joined when it was a whole lot smaller than it was today. It was 20,000 people. And it felt still like it had that startup energy and changed the world and did some really interesting things. I was the first head of strategy. I was the first, I was the founder of the brand studio. I was the first person to run marketing for hardware before we even had a hardware business.
That's cool.
I had some really exciting adventures there. And then, I jumped ship to join Uber about 10 months ago, which feels like 10 years ago, having lived through the pandemic and living through the time.
Yeah, I mean, what timing, right?
But I have to say, you know, it wasn't a natural decision for me to join Uber. I'll say, you know, when they called me, I said, I'm not sure you want me to lead marketing. I was one of the folks who joined to lead Uber in the heyday. But I really came to respect Dara and the fact that the company is not the company that it was. And it could be a really powerful force for good. And talk about bringing public and private interests together.
Oh,
imagine
the infrastructure that Uber has in place, and Lyft, and just the general infrastructure is extraordinary. And to your point, things evolve tremendously over time.
Yeah, we have new leadership. I think we have the right leadership. I think it's a company that has learned many lessons from its past. Let's just say that. And if you could imagine the like leveraging the reach and the power and frankly the brashness and the boldness of what you think of Uber, imagine leveraging that to redefine work, leveraging that to get cities to be more sustainable, leveraging that to fight the pandemic. Like that's kind of the company and the brand you want to be taking on these world problems. And so how do we harness that energy and that intent, which I do believe is in the company.
Have you interacted with Travis Freeman yet? Oh. All right. Former executive at Vayner who's there. So
Travis, my Travis. Sorry.
Yeah, you're Travis. Okay,
I was thinking infamous Travis and I just went
no,
there.
No, no, not, no. I'm sorry, not Travis Kalanick.
My Travis? Your Travis? Yes. Love Travis.
Got it. Okay. I was like, man, how the hell did they not interact yet? I guess this COVID thing is crazy.
Interact. I am like
so every day, right? I figured.
Sorry.
No problem. No worries
calling
at all.
To Travis, who I'm sure is listening earlier today. He's like one of the best hires I've ever made.
He's the best dude of all time. I'm sure if he's watching, if he's not busy, he was like, what the hell?
Exactly. No, Travis is
talk to me about 10 months in, a lot of people can relate to this. 10 months into a new gig, you're just getting your feet underneath you. Boom. Probably the biggest single event that any of us have gone through in our careers. And for some people, our lives, how difficult was that? Obviously Uber itself in its core business was, you know, some businesses have flourished during this time. This is a real challenge for Uber's core business. Obviously, we see the Postmates news and different things. Like, what? Give us a little 411 on the chaos and maybe some insights that might be able to help other people that are going through chaos or one day will.
Yeah, good question. Well, in some ways, Uber has been well trained at crises.
Right.
So it's a company that actually goes into its best mode when a crisis hits. I have to say, it's an incredibly rigorous operational company. And so we actually organized and scenario planned well in February before things kind of really were clear where they were heading. I mean, I was still keeping travel on the books till the end of March thinking, yeah, I'm going to go to India in April. I'm still going.
Oh, I had this. I had this so wrong. I was like, okay, if everything goes atrocious, and this was like in March, atrocious, we'll all definitely be back by 4th of July. If it goes, that was my like catastrophic timing. So I can resonate with that. Go ahead.
Yeah, we had a leadership, company-wide leadership summit planned in person in February, and Dara called it off, but said, you know, those who are still willing to travel should, and a small group of us came together over 3 full days, every function of the company represented in about a group of 40 people, to really think through what does this mean? What are the different ways this could play out? And frankly, what's our role? Like what, how should we show up in this? You know, and this was actually the moment where the light bulb went off for me as the brand guy of like, we have such reach and we're essential service. And before the term essential was kind of becoming more talked about, like, you know, people rely on us for basic transportation and work every single day in, you know, 10,000 cities around the world. So we have an ultimate responsibility to show up in a way that assures people that we're there for them when they need us, assures them they can help them move safely, but also partners with governments to make sure we're getting the right information out. And in many ways we are, you could say like, you know, we're a basic service. And so I coined the term early that this is an opportunity for us and a need for us to show up like a citizen leader. You know, we need to be a leader as a brand and as a company of our size, but we also need to be a citizen and really be part of the communities and cities that we're working in and the countries and really figure out how to help address the virus. And so, you know, some principles like let's stay close to government authorities and make sure that we're communicating what the health authorities are communicating, make sure we're keeping the business open where we're essential, but also really, frankly, urging people not to ride if that's what's clearly going to stop the virus. And so it became a kind of a moment to articulate those values and to do what Dara has urged the company to do since he joined, is to do the right thing. And really not just think about the business, but think about the people in the community.
Speaking of which, this is a good transition. Thank you for not riding with Uber. That very much caught my attention. Please explain that, and maybe you can connect those two dots.
Sure, yeah. So taking everything I just said, I mean, we actually very early put a lot of health authority information into our app because, you know, people were going to our app on a regular basis. And so communicating what the authorities were telling the cities and the countries that we're in terms of what's safe and how they should operate, how should they move. So we were very early to do that. In fact, we put some messaging pretty early in our app that said flatten the curve, you know, only ride if you need to. So encouraging people to just think twice. And so then we came up with this idea to communicate that message more broadly, because it was obvious that what we needed to do to address the virus is just stop movement. And what better company and brand to tell people to stop move than the Movement brand, the company that's always stood for movement. So you might argue it could have been a career limiting move to have the first campaign I go to Dara to ask for is like, can we run an ad that says, don't ride our product? and we did, you know, and he definitely paused. He's like, are you sure we really want to say that on television? But it was the right thing to say, and it felt like the responsible thing to do, and frankly had that kind of response that I think you had, which is it stopped people to realize actually it must be a really important message to come from Uber, because it's not in our interest to actually be saying that.
Big shout out to Jim Davis for the kind words of this show, giving you some love, Thomas, and the others. Hashtag marketing for the now. If you got insights, quotes, things of that nature, we love watching you all on Twitter. Thomas, what about the speed in which we all have to navigate now? You come from a background that I think, especially in Google times, like speed was a variable, hence to your point, even if it was 20,000, it was still a very fast company. Do you feel that the Zooms, Google Hangouts, Slacks, email, text, like, do you think the infrastructure from remote working is actually leading to more speed?
I do. I mean, I've been calling the work that we've been doing, and Travis and I talk about this, is real-time marketing. I mean, there's never been more real-time marketing than the last, you know, 4 or so months. I mean, you know, the spot that we just referred to, thank you, riders, we created in 3 days. We're running a spot now, no mask, no ride. Also, I think a really important message. And so while we're open for business, we want people to realize a mask actually not just keeps you safe, it keeps everyone around you safe. And frankly, we need to keep our drivers safe. Yeah. And we created that spot in 3 days as well. So like, So for the first few months, we were doing focus groups 3 days a week, every week in every country, because we just needed to stay close to kind of how things were changing, how people were perceiving things. And we're still trying to keep our pulse on things, because this is evolving in ways that are just unprecedented. And so doing work, being responsive, we've pivoted. I mean, we were ready to run the no mask spot the week of the Black Lives Matter protests that occurred. And so we quickly pivoted and said, that's not the right message right now, and put that on the shelf. You don't know when we'll run that. And then we pivoted back as the debate has kind of raged up around the mask. So like, I mean, it's like we're looking out a few months, but I don't feel like I can look out more than 8 weeks without any real sense of like what we should be doing.
Tapping into your uncomfortable likability that you're possessing here on this interview. I'm just genuinely curious about you, the dude. Any behavior shifts from you that you're most intrigued by? New shows, new apps? Buying something new direct to consumer that you never thought you would, and now you can never go back. Anything hit your radar if you're self-evaluating? I like that you're looking out to yonder, so you're thinking. You know, anything that really stands out to you about maybe a new consumer trend from you, maybe a new OTT platform, maybe the way you consume news. Anything stand out?
It's so funny. If anything, my mind quickly goes to the human things that I'm doing and doing more regularly, like going to walk the dog in the park every morning despite the stress of the day that's about to come.
Has that been a wonderful addition to your life?
Having dinner at the dinner table, not the kitchen counter with my partner every day, with proper table, like not tablecloths,
but just like a proper sit down.
Settings, not using our hands to eat more, you know? So like actually those moments have been the more memorable. My partner is shopping online more than I'd like. So we've got too much cardboard in the recycling. I keep complaining about that. So he's leaned into that behavior. But I have to say it's been more trying to embrace the human connections in this and reaching out to friends and family that I haven't talked to in a long time. Actually, that's been sort of more memorable to me than some of the technology that maybe I've always used or just I'm a slow adopter to.
Well, the affirmation to your incredible likability has been confirmed on Twitter. I knew it, I was feeling it. I will be texting Travis right now to make sure we get to chop up and spend some time together. I really appreciate you and your insights, and I wish you nothing but health.
Thanks for having me. Good luck. Bye.
All right, episode's over. Please leave a review and subscribe up on Apple. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Hey, podcast. Joe from Team Gary here. Today's highlighted review is Much Love by Hunter Vickers. Love the podcast. Love you, Gary. Keep going.